Jimmy Corain's a nerd. Jimmy Corain's an improv nerd. Jimmy Corain's a nerd. Oh, Jimmy.
Hey, everybody, this is Jimmy Corain, and you're listening to another great, 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 great episode of Improv Nerd. This episode is so incredible that I had to just put four greats in front of it. Our guests today are four members of Three-Peat: Namdi Ngwae, Patrick Rowland, John Thibodeau, and Dwayne Perkins. Now, if you haven't heard of Three-Peat, I'm sure you're going to hear about them pretty soon, because I think these guys are going to hit it nationally. They are one of Chicago's best improv groups. This entirely black ensemble has been playing at the IO Chicago for years. We sat down with these four members and talked about diversity in improv, their style of play, and how they work together in terms of chemistry, and how they came up with the name. And since this was a live show recorded at Judy's Beat Lounge at the Second City Training Center, I was fortunate enough to get to improvise with these guys, and they taught me a lot. So before we get to the episode, I just want to say, I don't know. I'm crazy. I'm just getting crazier and crazier. I don't know what it is. Having Betsy, or just I'm getting older, or therapy isn't working. I was at Walgreens the other day, and I was checking out at the counter. Now, if you don't know what Walgreens is, I know some people are in listen to this in different countries. It's a big drugstore. It's a chain store drugstore. And I forget, I was buying some supplies, like writing supplies and stuff. And I was talking, you know, to the cashier there. And there was a line behind me, because there was one cashier and then another cashier. There was only two cashiers open. And all of a sudden, this guy who's holding like couple bottles of Diet Coke and a bottle of rum. He, you know, and I'm being friendly to the cashier because I'm in a good mood. And the guy with the rum and the Diet Cokes leans over to us because he's waiting. He's impatient behind me in line. And he goes, "Hey, stop talking and get to work," or something. And I take it personally, because I think it's directed to not only the cashier, but to me. I think it's to both of us. And I just leave the store, and I am really upset, you know? And so I go home and I tell Lauren about this, and she kind of laughs, because she knows anytime anybody tries to silence me or shush me or tells me I'm too loud, she knows I get angry about this. So I told her about this, and she's like, "Well, you know, I don't really think he was directing it towards you. I think he was directing it towards the cashier." And I'm like, "I don't think that's what happened." And I'm just, of course, I ruin the night, you know, and then the next day, I ruin most of the next day until I get into therapy. And I bring this up to my therapist, and my therapist is like, your wife was right. It wasn't being directed at you. It was being directed at the cashier. And I'm like, I still took it personally. You know, I felt bad for the cashier, you know, and that's what I do. And I take on all their shame and whatever. And it's like, oh, how crazy am I that I wasted a whole day and a half being upset about something that wasn't directed towards me? I am nuts, people. I am nuts. It's amazing that I can even get this podcast out every other week. That's how crazy I am. Enough about me. You don't need to hear about me, but you do need to hear from these four guys, because they know what they're talking about. Here it is, four members of Three-Peat, the Three-Peat episode. Enjoy.
Jimmy's a nerd, he's a nerd, oh yeah. Jimmy's a nerd, he's a nerd.
So we're going to start with Namdi. And thank you for helping me out putting this together, because you were the one who started this group, right?
I was one of them that started it together.
And you told me that you invited a bunch of other black improvisers that you'd seen at auditions or worked with to be part of it. Why was it important to create the group?
Can we cuss on this?
Can we cuss words? Yes, please.
Okay.
Please. That's why they.
I know. I just want to be careful. A lot of the times in the performing here in town, we get there's not too many roles in stage or filmed productions for your standard black. So we would always be we put up y'all these four fools with me. So would end up in the same audition rooms all the time, same roles, and we're all friends of each other. So instead of being allowing these other people to put us up against each other, we decided to get together and make our own thing.
And John, you told me that you all bonded really quickly because you all had the experience of being a minority in improv. Can you tell us a little about what that experience of being a minority in improv was like for you?
I think when you're the only of any particular group, whether it be a female improviser or improviser of color or both, a lot of times when people make jokes that have to do with like how you identify, people look at you like you're the emperor. And, you know, to give the thumbs up or thumbs down. Like, yeah, was that good? Or can I do that? Can I say Negro? You know, it's like... and sometimes that can be emotionally taxing. So I think a lot of us were like, well, if we get together, we all are different. But the world sort of looks at us in the same shoes. But we can break out of that through just being together and celebrating the diversity within our minority-focused group.
And Patrick, can you describe a little the style of Three Pete's play? Because it's very distinctive.
Yeah, our style is just do whatever the fuck we want. It's like fast, fun. We start off, one of us will do get a suggestion, do a personal monologue. We ask questions to help fill out the monologue, and then we just go and like, if it feels good, do it. Yeah, it's not really set form. Per se, it's just like we're just having fun out there, and if it's fun, do it.
And I think it was either John or you who said that your style is fun, fast, and educational. Do you remember who said that? You said that. Mm-hmm. What's the educational part of it?
The educational part would be we, along with the fun, we clue people in into what goes on in our lives, whether you know, like the whether it be the silly microaggressions that the typical improv audience isn't aware of.
What's one of that a typical improv audience wouldn't be aware of?
One could be something as simple as my very very Nigerian name, not caring about it or just brushing aside the fact that it has meaning behind it, etc. Things like that. There's a ton. Mm-hmm. We don't have time for all that.
And how do you do it? How do you do it, Dwayne, without being preacher, hitting it over the head? Because you guys are very successful at making it funny.
I think we just had practice at it because from jump, being an improv, we had to play defensively, and being within the group, you don't have to. And so even if it does come off preachy, it's like, deal with it. You already bought the ticket. and I think there are moments where that is just the voice that we have. Like, if something needs to be said, we will say it. And if it comes off preachy, at least the meaning behind it should still be felt. And I think as a group and as individuals, we're all slightly revolutionary in the sense that, like, the energy of 3P is just, like, unrequited joy through blackness. And I think that that is something that within the bigger scheme of improv, we don't necessarily feel. So within that amount of time that we get to play together, that's the moment where it's like we can do and say whatever we want. And if you have an opinion about it, it's your opinion.
So, John, how is this different in terms of what you can say with Three Pete versus a typical Herald team you might be on?
I wouldn't qualify it as to what I'm allowed to say. I would qualify it as being the reaction of the people on stage to what I say. So you could have the same initiation in a group of people who are different than Three Pete and wouldn't be taken in the same way. And I think it's because everyone in Three Pete shares a lot of common experiences of being felt that they're another or, you know, just coming up in this white world of improv. We all share some common ground in that. And also, like, it's important to shed the fear that comes along with, like, oh, if I come into this scene, they're going to instantly make me a gang member holding everyone up. You know, like, that sort of, like, fear is not there when you're playing with your friends. And it's the same if you're playing, you know, with a bunch of people you grew up with, like, on your block. They'll probably make the best improv team because you all have a similar frame of reference and you all watch the same movies. And I think we share a lot of that together as well.
Now, Patrick, the personalities on this group are very, very strong personalities. How has it been able to work so well?
I think because we're just friends and we have our different places where we come from, but we respect each other and we listen to each other, and we'll check each other if need be. If one of us gets out of pocket, we'll check it, and that person gets checked, we're like, yeah, I was out of pocket.
Give me an example of if someone's out of pocket. John's laughing. Is he out of pocket a lot of the time?
No.
Okay.
I'm laughing at you saying the phrase out of pocket. Okay.
No, like,
it doesn't work. It doesn't look good on me.
So I'll say, like, for instance, like in a scene, if like I'm in a scene with Shantira and I say something like, "Ah, man, you throw like a girl" or something like that, she will check that shit.
On stage,
yeah. Okay. Through her character or whatever. Right. But speaking her truth, then I'd be like, oh, yeah, that's right. You know, because, like, there's some things I still, like, may slip up or, like, my mind does a dum-dum, you know.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
But, yes, John, you were going to say something?
Oh, I was just going to say that a lot of times that's one of the fun parts of comedy is you get to play characters who don't have your same worldview, and when you have opposing worldviews on stage, you get a conflict that can be, like Namdi said, educational and sometimes. And I think we don't shy away from calling out the bullshit that people will say on stage, whether it be through the lens of their character or just something that they actually believe that we take issue with. On stage is not out of bounds for us because a lot of times, I feel like when we're on stage, the audience is irrelevant. We're having fun with each other. And the way we have fun with each other, even before shows, is we tease the hell out of each other. And that's like...
That's your warm-up?
Yeah, that's okay. Our warm-up is just like taking the piss out of everybody. And it's great.
Now, Dwayne, let's say we're doing... I'm part of the group. And and
it's a big leap of faith there.
Right, yeah. And we don't agree on the same thing. We don't come from the same point of view. How do we make that work on stage? Because, I mean, we all have strong points of view, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's what makes it fun. If you have the same point of view, you're just going to be all doing the same stuff. And that's no fun. I think the tension is what's fun. So if you have a different point of view, we can use that on stage and just discuss it. Every show I've done, I've been with people who didn't have the same point of view, and I learned how to deal with it. And that's how you get the funny, is being like, oh, who are these characters? Why do they feel the way that they feel? Let's talk about it.
So we don't have to agree. Do we have to agree on stage with this?
Oh, I say no all the time. I feel like that's because that's a reality of the real world where you don't, and especially as minorities, we get rejection, we hear no often. And I think in improv, the inclination is to say yes, but I think you can say yes by saying no and then discuss how that no is relevant to the scene.
So what do you have a strong point of view on that maybe somebody in the group would disagree with?
There was one scene in particular where me and Shantira did, she was like, we were at a bus stop and I was trying to talk to her and she was like, oh, and it became like a catcalling thing, which I was like, oh, that's something that she has a strong point of view about. And then I was like, oh, I'm a black man, like a black gay man. I'm not trying to catcall you. So I was like, oh no, let me flip this. How dare you assume that me being a man, I'm trying to catcall you. I was trying to tell you your bra strap was showing. But there's like... That was a situation where it was like, oh, these two different people coming at the scene from different points of views. And when that tension hit, that's what the scene was. Being like, oh, we both made assumptions about this one thing based off how we look or the thing that we said. And that's the greatness of improv.
And so, Namdi, when that happens, do you guys have discussions after the show going, okay, that was my point of view, or is it just like, okay, let's move on? I mean, do you carry it, still carry it after the show, or is it let's move on?
No, we don't really like break everything down after okay. a show. It's just like we just carry on and go order some chicken wings and hang out. or tomato soup. What is it you get? This fool gets like tomato
chili.
Soup. Chili. Yeah. Yeah. we don't really dwell on anything. It's like, that was fun. What's next?
John, did the first show when you had it, was it just like instant, it worked, or did it take a while to hit your groove?
I think through the evolution of groups, what you think might be the first show working perfectly never turns out to be what the group ends up being, you know, 5 years down the road. I think on stage, us playing with each other in the first few years worked great. But like, we didn't realize what the full evolution of the group would become. I think our playing style has changed a good amount since those early shows. Those early shows were very much a product of like, oh, all these people have done the Herald a bunch, and now they're going to do this show, which is like a lot of what independent groups start out as. But on a performer agreement, like everyone getting along and having a good time on stage, yeah, of course it clicked because we all knew each other outside of the work, and we all got along and still do get along very well. But the playing style has changed, I would say. Yeah.
Now, people from the group continue to be successful. Shantira's gone on to write for BET. Chris Redd is just killing it in stand-up. How do you guys deal, Patrick, with other people's success?
Celebrate it. Why wouldn't we? We get so happy when one of us gets something. It's almost like we got it ourselves. It's not dealing with it. It's like enjoying. It's like, fuck yeah. Like, about damn time. We get recognized for the work we do in this industry. It's nothing to deal with, but more like celebrate. You should always celebrate your friends' successes. That's just like, duh.
Yeah, sure.
I think that we all know each other very well, and we're all very different. So I don't think, what I'm trying to say is that within certain white groups, there's a weird sense of competition because a lot of white people aren't the same. I'm kidding. No, I'm kidding.
Dwayne, it's true.
I know. I wasn't kidding. True. I was trying to soften the blow for y'all.
Yeah.
But I do think that there's like this, because there's not a lot of jobs within improv, especially within Chicago. So I think there is this weird sense of competition. But within Threepeat, we're all very different, and we know we're all very different. And though we acknowledge that people in the industry might put us in the same box, we know that we're not in the same box. So if somebody gets something, it's probably because it was meant for them. So it's not like we're like, oh, why'd you get that thing that was perfect for you? Like, it wasn't perfect for me, so why would I get it? And I think that knowledge like helps us celebrate each other, because we are all very different, and the opportunities that come to us are more fit for us. And if it's not, then we create our own stuff.
Is there more opportunities now? I mean, I've been around improv for a long time. What can we do better with diversity?
Yeah, one opportunity is more than none. So I guess there are more opportunities now. It's like more than what was the total before. That's the million-dollar question, Jimmy. What can people do to increase diversity? It's just, you know, hire brown people. That's all you got to do.
Yeah,
it's not that hard. If people were talking about, like, Samantha Bee and how, like, she created a diverse writers' room on her show, and the simple question was like, oh, how did you find all these diverse writers? It's because I hired them. You know, that's the only barrier is convincing the people in the decision-making positions that a wide range of worldviews is advantageous for the product you're trying to sell. And I think it's become true for a lot of shows and television. Like, everybody's winning Emmys and these diverse shows like Atlanta and Master of None. And I mean, it's... I also hesitate and shudder because I feel like it's like becoming a trend. It's like trendy to hire Brown now, or like, you know, put him on the cover of your Netflix splash screen and everything. But the flip side is that, oh, when is it, what happens when it becomes not trendy? Is it is there going to be a backlash to that? And I hope not, obviously. But it's not. It's more than a trend. Like, these people have been in America for generations, and they are now seeing themselves represented in media, and I feel like that's the beginning of the wave, because the more people realize that they see themselves out there, and people like them who look like them can do the thing that they want to do, then you get more people signing up for classes, you get more people doing the work, and you get more people advancing to the next level.
And what you guys are doing, Patrick, really is doing that work, because people come and see, your audience is a little different than a typical improv audience.
I will get a lot of people that will come up to us and say, like, it's good to see people like me up there on the stage. Me, myself, personally, when I was going through classes here, IO, whatnot, I rarely saw... Besides what, Pimp Prov, I didn't see any black folks, right? When people hear of us and they see like this all black team like just crushing shit, that we start getting that audience, and we start getting bigger and better audiences because we have that point of view that differs from your average improv team, right? Which is like mostly white guys with glasses. Sorry, Jimmy.
That's okay.
and two or three white women, right? And then you got this other team, you got us, where we have this point of view that's not been heard in a while or ever, and it's just very intriguing to audiences.
And Nam, do you guys do something special? You one show a month, you give free tickets away, is that right?
Oh yeah, that was with the diversity jam. The whole show was free, because we wanted to like help shine a bit of light onto our show, because our show isn't necessarily for a typical improv audience exclusively. You know, something like this will help get exposed what we do to folks that wouldn't necessarily watch an improv show. So
have you had people that were looking for, you know, coming to IO looking for a typical audience? Dwayne, typical audience improv show, and then they come and saw you and just loved it?
Yeah, I think that's the greatness of it, is that there was one time Shantara was talking to her Uber driver, and she was like, hey, I'm doing this show. And the Uber driver was like, oh, I should come. And the next day she was there, and she was this older woman who just moved here, and she was just like trying to find friends, and she put her name in the hat and got picked to improvise. She improvised for the first time ever, and she was so fucking dope. She was so dope. Yeah. And afterwards, we were just like all talking, and I might have cried in a corner because I was like, yo, improv's changing lives. But it was just, it was really nice to see her reaction to that and to us on stage, and knowing that if this platform didn't exist, she would have never done improv. And I think that's why representation does matter, because it then allows people to know and to feel like they can do this as well. And she was like living proof, this like woman. We like took pictures. She was turning up. Like, it was great.
So when I asked that question, John was laughing to himself. What was so funny about the question or the answer?
The question, which question?
The one I just asked Dwayne.
About the Uber driver?
No.
I was just thinking of the Uber driver, because she was hilarious. I don't know. No, I agree with Namdi. Like, the reason we have the diversity, we have the show free on the diversity nights, and so people can come out, and it's called the diversity jam. So in the title, it's sort of like a bad signal for like the people will probably be cool, like you probably won't have to deal with all the crappy stuff, and that's sort of what we try to brand those nights as a like a kind of like a kiddie pool of like introducing people to the world of like the shady world of improv. And we do it in a place where there's a very low barrier to entry. It's free tickets, and you get to see people be okay to terrible at improv, and then we do a show. And it's a lot of fun.
And speaking of doing a show, we're going to improvise now. I'm terrified, you guys. I'm terrified to do this because you guys play fast, right? I'm a guy who's old. I'm slow. And so what would you suggest? What is your secret of playing fast? Because, Namdi, you don't you did Improv Nerd a while ago. You can play incredibly slow. So what advice would you give? They're laughing.
Oh, slow ass.
Yeah. Yeah. Damn, dude, why are you so slow, man?
Come on, young blood.
This is good. This is part of the warm-up, and I'm sure it'll turn on me in a second. Yeah. So what advice would you give me to jump in with you guys today?
Just keep up, man. You'll okay. be all right.
Well, just have you? Up. But I mean, have you? Because you can play very patient. Mm-hmm. How do you make that adjustment in your head with playing faster with these guys?
Me personally, it's honestly not a. There isn't a thing I say to myself before any kind of show. When I'm jumping back and forth between different casts or different shows, I just see who's out there, what's going on, and then get ready like one of those little high energy puppies.
Okay, great.
Yeah, yeah, man.
I will just play. I'm visualizing a high energy puppy. That's what I'm going to do.
Do
you guys like to start? Just take a suggestion.
We're just doing a scene.
Yeah, we'll do a scene. Yeah.
I think we just take a sug, and then we party.
Okay, great.
Yeah.
Okay, can we get a suggestion for
Boondoggle?
Boondoggle.
Y'all, are we using this microphone thing?
Yeah.
Are they gonna pick it up?
Should we? Well, let's.
I can't.
Yeah. Use the microphone. Okay, great.
Great.
Okay.
Hey.
Well, guys, the reviewer will be here soon, and I just want to wish all you guys a good show opening today. All right? It's going to be the best production of A Raisin in the Sun that this town's ever seen. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
I have my reservations, but I'm going to keep them to myself.
Oh, okay. Juliet has some reservations. Why don't you share them?
Didn't you just hear me say I'm going to keep them to myself?
I know what they are. She doesn't get to sing a solo. She wanted to make this thing a musical.
I do have a degree from Juilliard, but like, what the fuck ever.
I'm just happy to be here, you guys. You know, it's just that when I was in high school, people used to like make fun of me, but look at me now. I'm all raising in the sun.
Can we just get this over with? Let's do it.
Before the show, I want you all to meet our reviewer. This is Mr. Anderson from the
yes.
Times.
Oh, shit, he's
here. I'm here, yes. I was invited back here before the show just to kind of absorb what you guys, your process.
Mm-hmm. We hope we can count on a 4-star review from you today.
Oh, sure, sure, sure.
Yeah, hope to review our art.
Yeah.
And just that.
Oh, what do you mean by that?
Well, I just don't want you, like, talking about your own views on race or anything, but just like see the art. Don't be an asshole. Because, I just said asshole to the reviewer. Sorry. I get triggered.
If you want us to put on an understudy, we can put on an understudy for Timothy today.
I think that would be probably appropriate.
I got your ass, Timothy. In this review, I would specifically ask you to not mention certain things, my marriage, my kids, my skin condition.
Well, I review, so I'll be covering that. And everyone's body type and everyone's color.
Ooh.
Oh.
Yes. Did I say something wrong? What did I say wrong? I write for a major paper.
What kind of paper is it?
It's a newspaper. Are you familiar with newspapers?
Ooh.
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 Ooh. Okay. Yeah. All right, Mr. Anderson.
Okay. you going all Hedy Weiss on us.
Hedy Weiss. Mm-hmm. Well, she is a colleague of mine, and I think, is that funny? Was that funny?
Ooh, you need to. Ooh. Okay. Okay.
Yes.
Okay. So one of my
Kenny got claws.
He needs to watch his tone. Mm-hmm. Do you know the plot of Raisin in the Sun?
Yes, I'm familiar with Raisin in the Sun. Sidney Poitier did it in a movie.
Of our version of Raisin.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's no. Why don't you tell me?
Well, it's about a group of people who had enough, then they fuck up a reviewer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And in the middle, there's some grapes that get put out in the sun.
And they shrivel up.
Into raisins. And then they sing a song like the California Raisins.
One, two, three, four.
And it's a symphony on Broadway.
Da 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 da.
Broadway. See, that's what we do.
Mm-hmm.
Scene. Great job. Oh. All right. So what did we think? That was very hard for me, you know, because I realized that I needed to push back harder to, right? I mean, that was my, if we were going to
stand your ground, Jimmy, stand your ground.
Yeah.
I think one thing that helps us is the lack of questioning a choice or a decision.
Mm-hmm.
If somebody's like, everyone's going to jump on stage and plie, then everyone's going to do it, act first, and then everything else will be fine after that, rather than thinking about it too tough. Oh, is this going to be right? Kind of vibe. It is definitely weird to do improv with microphones in your hands.
Yes.
But like just the stuff that we do typically on stage is like, hey, a thing's happening. I want to be part of that too. That's our vibe.
We got to take a quick break here, and then we'll be right back after this. So John, you can't sit back and wait for something to happen. You got to jump in there.
Yeah, exactly. No one is going to wait for you to make a choice. The choices are going to be happening fast and furiously in our show. And it's sort of like if you sit back on your heels, you won't get into the show. You have to be willing to jump and get involved as quickly as possible.
Well, you did a nice thing. You brought me in because I was totally lost. The first.
I threw you a life preserver. You were treading out there.
I was treading. I was drowning, John. I was spitting up water by the
That's
time.
That's what it's, I mean, hey, and playing, sometimes I threw you into a position that you might not have wanted to be in, but like, I think like our philosophy is like, playing polite, what you think is polite, is you're hurting everything. If you're trying to play polite, you're hurting everything.
I agree. Right. Like if you don't make a choice, we make a choice for you, and you just have to like deal with it. Like there's been times where I'm like, I'm gonna come out and be this person, and I was too slow, and somebody was like, you're Star Jones, and I was like, okay, that is who I am now, because I did not make a move quick enough. Yeah. So I feel like that was like one of those situations of like, well, you didn't pick, so this is who you are.
Yeah.
This is the thing, you know, maybe I have, but I think sometimes I'm speaking for myself. Like, so I'm the character is racist, right? Wouldn't you say?
I mean, that's for you to decide. You playing him. You playing him. You playing him.
All right.
Yeah.
Right. But so as an improviser, like, oh, fuck, I'm making that choice. Now people are going to think that's who I really am. And I think so there's this. How do you do it? Because basically we were commenting on something that happened in Chicago with a reporter at the Sun-Times, or a reviewer, Hedy Weiss, who had written a review that, you know, people had thought was very racist. Mm. How do you make peace with something we just did?
Oh, I think you just do it and do what I play. Like, my favorite character to play is a terrible white woman, because there's so many and they're so secret. And I think you just do it. You commit to it, but still with the knowledge that there are people watching you. And like, if you were playing a guy that you thought was racist, that's fine. But you know, like, as a human being, what that line is.
Right.
And if you don't cross that line, I don't think no one would be like, oh, he's racist. Mm-hmm. Unless you say some shit that's, like, really racist. And then they're like, oh, he racist. Yeah. Right. So you have to find that line. And I think being a white man, that line is just, like, very definite.
Right.
So,
yeah.
But I don't think there's, like, a... Like, you can't play those characters. You just have to play them smart.
Mm-hmm. And playing playing those characters is always super interesting. Like, to see that played out on stage is riveting. People will be focused on it. But also, I think there's, like, a duty in it a little bit to play those characters sometimes as, like, a lower status, or perhaps maybe they get what they deserve by the end of the piece. But, like, as long as, you know, we make a comment on what's going on and we end up being on the side that we all agree on, if you end up playing the character that is terrible for a while, that's fine, as long as the bigger message is one that you stand behind, I think.
What do you think? Namdi was going to say, and then we'll get back.
There's many ways to play a terrible character and not come across it as the worst human being in the world as well. You know, I mean, he mentioned it a moment ago, but, you know, as a white dude, there's things that you can say or do that'll, like, rub the audience the wrong way that somebody else can totally get away with. So being aware of that is important as well.
Great.
Yeah, I think I tell my students a lot too. Like, sometimes you gotta play the asshole, you gotta play the villain, right? But play it at the height of your intelligence, right? Play it smart, and fucking commit to it. And yeah, like, know, like, that line. Right? If you'd have dropped the N-word, Jimmy, we'd have been fighting on stage. But, like, there's, like, knowing that line and playing it smart.
A lot of times we forget that, like, even these terrible people have, like, backstories and they have reasons why they believe what they believe. And if you use the tool of empathy, if you can make someone empathize with the racist on stage, then that's, like, a powerful tool. And a lot of times, like, that's where playing it to the top of your intelligence can come into your advantage. If you're a total racist guy, but then we cut to a scene where, like, your dad taught you to be racist and your grandpa taught you to be racist, and now you're struggling with these ideas, like, that's powerful in and of itself. But, like, if you add another dimension to the person who's horrible, then they become horrible in a different way.
So going back to that scene, what could I have done to play it differently, do you think?
Jimmy, if you pay me another $80, I can teach you a workshop.
Yeah. And I'm just throwing it out.
Maybe add another dimension. Maybe, you know, this is the first time you reviewed a black play, so you're just trying to tread on, walk on thin ice here, and maybe you want to learn a little bit from us. That gives you a little bit of empathy. Like, the desire to question your own worldview is like empathizing in a way.
And I think details really help too. Like, even if you're like, hey, my wife is black, that would have added another dimension to it. To be like, oh, this is a liberal-minded person who thinks that, like, dating a black person supersedes their ability to be oppressive. So that's, like,
Bill Maher.
The layers, huh? Bill Maher. I heard that.
I said.
Oh. I was like, who said that? Yeah, so I think, like, if the scene was longer, I'm sure that stuff would have came out, but I wouldn't, like, tell you how to play that differently, because I think you played it the way that you played it.
Okay, great. Patrick, anything?
Yeah, I agree with Dwayne. Like, a lot of times, improvisers will, like, after scenes, after shows, like, oh, why did I make that choice? Like, you made it. Like, it's there. It's been done. There's you can't go back in time and redo it, so fuck it. Don't, like, learn from it and move on. I think you played it the way you were supposed to play it.
Great. Okay, so I gotta just, why is this in my head? It is, but I'm glad we're talking about it. Was there anything I did that was offensive?
Your existence.
No. I didn't think so.
No.
Okay. Not even close.
Okay. Nowhere near it. Okay. I've had
You're dealing
worse.
With your own baggage.
There's no question about it. But I think people, that's why I think having these discussions, don't you think that, there's this, don't you think sometimes there's the elephant in the room? Like, we don't want to talk about these things, about race and all that in comedy.
I always want to talk about it. No.
All right.
Yeah. I think the elephant is a construct of people who feel guilty about the elephant being in the room.
Well, I'm the elephant.
Yeah.
This group will probably tap somebody on the shoulder and be like, hey, that thing you did, probably, you know, think about this before you do that next time. Mm-hmm. Or think about how what you said or did or acted can affect somebody else that was observing or another member of the cast that may not want to say a thing. We'll probably this group will probably say something.
Someone will speak up.
Yeah, let me give you an example of a shitty scene, like something that is offensive that a white person did to me while I was in 5Bs. They started a scene with me.
I walk on stage,
and they say, hey, stand on that chair and put this noose around your neck. We're going to scare your mother. And I replied, he's a white guy. And I was like, hey, as your adopted son, I don't think you're being sensitive to my cultural background. And he goes, no, it's Halloween. Put the noose around your neck. And I was like, father, let's keep talking about how this is fucked up. And then he was dead to me for a while. Then he apologized like years later, and he was like, yo, I didn't realize how shitty that was. And I was like, oh my God, I forgot you existed because you were dead to me. But yeah, like that's one of those situations where like he was not playing a character that had those worldviews. He was just doing a really shitty thing. And once it was addressed within the scene to double down on that, that's like the wrong choice to make, because it added nothing to the plot. If we wanted to scare my mother, there was many ways to do it that didn't involve lynching, which is historically like fucked up. Mm-hmm. So I feel like you didn't like make a choice like that. Like, that's a choice that's just, there's no way to justify that in my mind. So what you did was just like a character with worldviews. What he did was shitty. So there's like a difference. Do you see that line?
Yes. Yes, I do. And what do you do, like as teachers, Patrick, when there's a situation like that Dwayne just described in your class?
Oh, I stop that shit automatically. I'll stop it right there. I'll like, scene, all right, let's talk about that. Why'd you make that decision? And usually the answer is like, oh, I thought it'd be funny. And it's like, no, it's fucked up, right? And we will have like discussions in class about race, about not always making the woman in the scene a prostitute or something like that. And usually when we have those conversations, like 99% of the times they get it. They just are ignorant of that. They haven't, like when I went through classes, I would do a scene where I come out with a British accent and I shit you not, my scene partner said, wait a minute, there aren't any black people in London. And I was like, first off, yeah. Second off, why isn't the teacher stopping this? They were just like, it was like, yeah, keep going. It was like, so when I became a teacher, I made a promise to myself that I would always stop that and like just educate in a nice way. I won't be like, ah, you fucker. Like I will tackle it in a nice way, the appropriate way. If they still don't get it, then we gonna have some words and like I'll get a little bit more harsher. But usually they get it and I'm like, all right, why don't you make a smarter choice? And they do it, and then the scene will be hilarious and they'll be like, oh, okay. It's just sometimes they're just ignorant of that fact. You gotta check it.
You wanted to say something, Namdi?
No.
Okay. Great. We're going to take some questions for you guys. If you could turn the house lights on.
Oh, hello.
Turn the house lights up. So if you got a question, yeah, we've got one right here. Yeah.
Oh, no. I was blind.
You were blinded.
I was blind.
Sorry about that. Yeah, right here.
So bright.
Too bright.
Question. Yes. How often do you guys How often do you guys rehearse together?
We've never rehearsed.
Never rehearsed.
Never rehearsed. Not one, like, three-peat's been around since, what, 2012? Never rehearsed. We shoot the shit, kick it, and just talk to each other. That's our rehearsing.
Now, John, would you recommend that to everybody? Why does it work for three-peat?
A few caveats. Okay. When you first start improvising, especially in your first year, like a gentleman out here, you have to surround yourself with it. I know I started improvising in college, and I was improvising in two different groups 4 times a week. So it was very much like we've all put in the hours. We've all put in the hours on stage and off stage in rehearsal rooms. And we've all rid ourselves of, like, just the new shine that happens on improvisers where you're a little nervous on stage, you're not used to the flow and everything. Like, we don't have that trepidation about performing anymore. And for us, it's just we're all different ingredients, and when we put ourselves together, we make a dish every time, and we all know our flavor. Everybody knows their flavor.
I'm hungry now.
You want gumbo?
I'm gumbo, yeah.
Great. Another question right over here. Right here? Yes.
Yep. Sort of similar to the rehearsal question. Like, for example, the song On Broadway.
Mm-hmm.
Have you all rehearsed that?
We did not know the words.
Yeah.
In the improv part, but Namdi, you do musical improv, so you. I bet during the show you probably bring it up. The music stuff, right? In
three-peat shows?
Yeah.
We all do. We all bring up the music at some point. Pat also does musical stuff, and Torian has a musical background. So does Lisa as well. But we all like. We all have music's part of our lives. What we all grew up just experiencing and listening to, so it definitely just comes into our shows, and we just don't shy away from it when it pops up.
Great.
Yeah.
Another question? Yeah, right here.
We're
all working in dope.
It's a busy group, and this was booked about a year ago. It's 6 months ago. But it's hard to get more than three of us in a room at the same time. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's why we don't do Monday shows right now.
Yes, Tom. How was the, because you just did a festival in the Twin Cities, so how do you find the audience different in Chicago and other places that you've improvised?
Well, in Chicago, they know the proper song and volume to play for us when they come out.
What is that song? What is the song?
The song is Niggas in Paris, and by Jay-Z and Kanye, and we bump that before we come out.
Yeah.
However, sometimes on the road, like, they don't play it and very loud, and there's lots of, I think, I don't know, they just never get it right, which is sort of like an inside joke with us. But more speaking to your point is, in Chicago, people know the flavor, they know the brand, they know what they're getting into, and our audiences are more diverse in Chicago in general, just because, like I said, people know what they're getting into. We sort of like branded ourselves as a, come one, come all type group. And then when we're on the road, we're playing a lot of festivals tend to be like almost like the inner sanctum, the people who really drank the Kool-Aid, and a lot of times that happens to be more homogenous sort of audiences of lost 20 somethings.
What do you tell somebody? Chicago is diverse, city. What do you tell people that are in smaller markets that want to do something like you guys? Maybe not on this big of a level, but
sometimes after we do a show at a festival that goes over well, like, we'll go backstage and it'll be like, somebody's moving to Chicago in that audience, because that's kind of like the attitude is like, you see people do it really well, then they ask us like, what should I do? It's like, oh, you got to go somewhere else. You got to move, I guess.
Do you agree to that, Dwayne?
Yeah, like, it's, you can't be like, if you want food, you can't be at a place where there's not food, so you got to go get it.
Great. Another question? We got a couple more. Yeah. Now yeah. Tell us what is the next episode, Julius? What is Julius? What is Julius, Nandy?
Julius is a show I created and it's that's yeah that's a sentence correct sentence it's a show I created and I'm just like writing and producing more of that.
Is it a web series, a live show?
Web series.
Okay.
Yeah.
When is the next one,
Nambi? Soon, man. Okay. I don't have a date.
Okay,
anything,
we'll get off your back about that. Yeah. We had another question. Yes, right here.
So what one tip would you give to somebody who's trying to put together a more diverse group, but
novice improvisers, not great people that you? So novice improvisers in diversity group. What country are you from?
India.
India. Okay, so this is a good one for you guys. India... diverse, and they're novice. What would you tell them?
There's a number of things. So chime in when you guys feel like it. But one, rehearsing is definitely a thing, especially as you're on the way up. But don't make it feel like a chore or a job or hard work. Whoever the one person in charge is, because there will only be one. Whoever that person is, if they're an asshole about it or annoying about this, the everything being perfect and together, then it will 100% drive some of the people away. So the one person in charge has to be aware of that as they're organizing the schedule and rehearsals and stuff.
John?
I would also say find people who are better than you, who you think are better than you, and like really stretch your legs and find people who you really admire. That's the one thing that can make you a better improviser is being on stage with people who are better than you. And there's something to be said for like rising to the level of your peers. And if you can find a group of people who all admire each other and all want to rise to the next level with each other in order to catch up or in order to rise together, then that's the one thing that'll make your group better. And stage time, reps. Just perform as much as you can.
Anywhere. Perform anywhere. Don't think like, oh, I have to get like the perfect slot at the Annoyance or at I.O. Like, perform at a bar. Perform like on the street. I don't care. Just get that stage time. We got a Monday at 10 p.m. slot. Monday 10 p.m. slot, and
there was no slot before they gave us a slot. Yeah. They weren't even using the theater at that time.
And we grew that shit. But yeah, perform anywhere, get that stage time, and hang out. Don't just like have your rehearsal, have your show, and go, okay, bye. Like, fucking hang out. Get to know one another. That's just going to make you a tighter group.
Great. We got time for one more question. Yes, right here. Individual future goals and aspirations. Nnamdi is nodding off right now. You don't like that question, do you, Nnamdi?
No.
Why don't you like it?
You gonna hold the mic?
No. Okay. Yeah. I don't like. That's be a dirty thing. Okay. No, I mean just make my mama proud. That's all.
Great, John.
I eventually want to do something with this group, obviously. Like
when you think about something with this group, in a television, film.
Any way we can reach a wider audience would be fine.
Wider or whiter?
Wider.
Yeah. Patrick?
I just want to create art. Somebody pay me a shit ton of money to do it.
And Dwayne,
you basic bitches, I've been thinking about this my whole life. Okay, so I would like to have an empire, a creative empire, kind of like RuPaul, but like different. But RuPaul is my role model. But I do want to create... I would love to have a series of television shows, some that I star in, some that I just write. just like Tyler Perry. but no, I really want to normalize blackness and gayness and the juxtaposition of that on some like Donald Glover, Lena Waithe type shit where stop saying Tyler Perry. I don't want to be Tyler Perry, but I do want to create art that normalizes blackness and that shows that blackness isn't monolithic. And yeah, that's my goal, to make like black gay people cool in the media and have them exist. Because if you think about it, black gay comics don't exist.
You exist,
sad.
Dwayne.
Oh my God, thank you so much. But I mean, like, on like a grander scale.
No, you're right.
On a wider scale. Whiter? I say whiter.
Great. I heard it as whiter. Okay. So we got to wrap this up. This has been so great. And we end the podcast always with the same question. And we'll start with Patrick. What's one piece of advice you'd give somebody starting out in improv today?
One piece of advice, have fun. Have fun. I always tell my class, you're going to get all these rules and shit thrown at you, and you'll start forgetting to have fun. So above anything else in this art form, always have fun.
Well, how do you do that? Because people do get locked down. They get this person's moving on faster than me, and they're getting this, and then the rules.
You can't worry about what other people are doing. It took me a while just to give, like, to have the mentality of, like, fuck it, I don't fuck it, right? You got to have a partial fuck it mentality in this, because, yeah, other people are going to be doing great things, and that's great for them, but you can't be concerned with them. You just got to remember why you're doing it.
Namdi, one piece of advice you'd give someone starting out in improv today?
Don't become an asshole. I say that a lot when I teach, and I mean it, because people in just because humans are trash. They would at the whenever they get success, and whenever people get in success or positions of power or money, whatever you want, whatever it is, you see a turn, and they get cocky and become assholes. You're getting low over the microphone. So I just would like to remind people not to become assholes.
Dwayne, one piece of advice you'd give someone starting out in improv today?
This is specifically for people of color. Don't drink the Kool-Aid. Don't because you may be the only person that's like you, don't think you have to assimilate. Figure out what this group, like what the environment is. Learn, but don't change yourself. Like, know who you need to be to move forward. But because a thing that I see, and that is kind of like scary, is when people of color think they have to be like a good person of color to be like nice, to be white friendly, to succeed. And that's, I think, the antithesis of art. Like, you are who you are, and that's your point of view. Don't dull yourself down to fit the regulars.
Give me an example of what would white a black improviser would do to be white friendly.
There was, as if some problematic stuff is being said in a rehearsal or on stage, thinking that bringing it up would then make them come off as angry, that I think is like not good. Because then you're going to put yourself in a corner to be a person that doesn't speak up. And I think you can be assertive and direct without being angry. But it is a true fear of people of color to be labeled as angry within this community if you speak up. So to be okay with that sometimes, be like, yeah, you're not going to say that to me. I'm not going to do that thing. You may think I'm angry, but that's on you. That's you stereotyping and trying to villainize me for speaking up. But don't be afraid to speak up, because then you're going to be left behind.
And John, one piece of advice you would give someone starting out in improv today?
I would say probably every 6 months, just reevaluate why you're improvising, because I think a lot of people get into improv to have careers in comedy because they think that's like a step that you're supposed to take. If you are improvising to become a writer, write. If you are improvising to act in movies, you should act like you do improv because you love improv. And I think a bunch of other shit clouds what that means for people. Ultimately, you should devote energy into this scene if you enjoy being on stage and improvising with people. And everything else just gets in the way of that. So, yeah, make sure you're doing it for the right reasons, because I think when ulterior motives come in is when people start carrying around chips on their shoulder and a little bit of nastiness under the surface because they're doing it for the wrong reasons. You should be doing it because you love it.
And you guys definitely do it because you love it, and it shows in 3-peat. Thank you so much for being our guest. Thank you, Namdi, Patrick, Dwayne, and John. Give these guys a great hand. And when can we see you next? When can we see you next?
Namdi?
We're going to be in Washington, D.C.
We put it on the website. Go to Facebook,
Instagram. Facebook, Instagram, look up 3-peat, the number 3, P-E-A-T. We'll be traveling around the country.
Okay, all right, indeed. But we're not performing in Chicago right now, is that correct?
No, we're all spread out, and okay. We reunite to do shows on the road.
Great.
Well, there'll be stuff.
You'll see stuff, and we can. You have a website, and what is the website?
Facebook.3peat.com.
Facebook. Yes. Okay, great. You're building your empire very slowly. Thank you so much.
Slowly. Slow burn. It's a slow burn. End the podcast with a slow burn.
All right.
It's being made right now. At least the
thank you so much, you guys. This was a blast. All right. Thank you so much for coming out. What can I say? Thank you again. Check out all our episodes. This one will be up in a couple weeks. And that's at jimmycarain.com. That's my website, Namdi.
You know, I have a podcast on a slow burn.
I think you taught me how to double down, John. I think I just doubled down. Yeah. I'm catching on. I didn't ask, how did the name 3-peat come about?
Namdi picked it.
in early stages of the as we were getting together and playing in bars and et cetera, we legit changed the name and picked a name right before we went up on stage. And one time we were at the bar next to old IO called Mullins,
yeah.
Basketball was on. And there's probably like a picture of like Jordan or something like that. And because of the success and everything that they did to do on the court and to get the championships, we picked 3-peat, and we had a great show, and then it sounded good, so we stuck with it.
So the lesson here is don't spend too much time coming up with an improv name.
No. A lot of them are stupid anyway.
All right. We got to go. Thanks again.
And there you have it. Another great episode of Improv Nerd. And I want to thank our guests, four members of 3-peat, Dwayne Perkins, John Thibodeau, Patrick Rowland, and Namdi Ngwe. Also, I want to thank the Second City Training Center and Judy's Beat Lounge, and also Jesse Swanson at the Second City Training Center, Dan Schiffmacher, my producer, who makes me sound slick and so professional. If it wasn't for Dan, you would not be hearing my voice right now. Also, Sam Bowers, who is the director of Improv Nerd. If you want more information about me, Jimmy Corain, and my award-winning improv classes and workshops and intensives called The Art of Slow Comedy, and to sign up for my Improv Nerd newsletter, which includes my Improv Nerd blog, go to jimmycarain.com. Also, like us on Facebook, Improv Nerd, because it really helps with my low self-esteem. Follow us on Twitter, Improv_Nerd, and check out our YouTube channel. Subscribe to it, because Dan put some really great clips from our interviews and live shows on the YouTube channel. We're lucky to be part of Feral Audio and all the great podcasts at feralaudio.com. So go over to feralaudio.com and check those out. And I want to thank you for listening. And until next time, remember, walk, don't run.
Let's say Seinfeld was on an island, and he was blowing Boris Karloff. What would that be like?
It might go something like this. Oh, Mr. Karloff, I loved you in Frankenstein, and I love giving you a blowjob. Why, Mr. Seinfeld, I love having you